Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector, an independent financial advisor, or an institutional investor looking for insights and informed perspectives, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. Today is a special episode. It's our final Morningstar conversation for the year in our underlying series called Mind Over Markets with Morningstar, and we're closing the series with the firm's most comprehensive piece of research, the Morningstar 2026 Global Outlook Report. Morningstar's Chief Research and Investment Officer, Dan Kemp, joins me today to unpack the major themes shaping the year ahead, whether it's uncertainty, valuations, currencies, or AI's infrastructure boom. We are going to talk about that all today. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Ruan, thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
Brilliant. Dan, let's start at the beginning. The opening of the outlook makes a firm point. Prediction can often do more harm than good, and Morningstar encourages investors to prioritize preparation instead. Can you start by explaining what preparation over prediction means for advisors and fund selectors heading into 2026, particularly after a year like 2025, which humbled so many forecasters?
Ruan, that's absolutely right. My word, it's been a challenging year for investors, but I think it's been a really important year because it's illustrated why prediction can be so dangerous and why preparation is so important. And as you know, at Morningstar, we are all about empowering investor success and not just demonstrating how clever we are. And so we're focused on how do we help people reach their financial goals. And obviously, the most important thing when trying to reach your goals is to stay on the journey. And that's challenging. If you think back to the year that we've just had, there's been so many temptations for investors to say, I'm done with investing. This is far too unpredictable. I don't know what's going on. The world has changed. I can't stick with my portfolio. I need to do something else. And that's disastrous. And the problem is that sometimes professional investors like us can fuel those problems by providing overconfident predictions. And you tend to see that at this time of year. As people publish their outlooks, they say, this is what's going to happen in the year ahead, in 2026. It's full of predictions. And those predictions get embedded in the minds of advisors and investors. And what that means is that when something unexpected comes along in the year ahead, and it certainly will, that's true of every year, as we saw this year, when something unexpected comes along, then that creates surprise. And as human beings, we don't respond well to surprise. So we normally have three responses. Sometimes we freeze, we don't do anything at all. That's great. That's the best response. But more often than not, we either try to run away from the surprise, known as the flight response, or we try and fight against the surprise, the fight response. So you can see that fight response in overtrading, people wanting to make too many decisions, but also that flight response, people wanting to get rid of their investments. They can't stand it anymore. And that, as I said, is absolutely disastrous. And so that's why instead of making these predictions, which can fuel that surprise, we're really focusing in our outlook on helping people to prepare for whatever lies ahead in 2026.
The report also highlights that uncertainty will remain elevated because of tariffs, central bank transitions, and geopolitics. But the behavioral research warns that this uncertainty triggers classic mistakes, whether it's panic selling, headline chasing, or just missing the recovery days that compound long-term returns. From a behavioral and investment perspective, what traps are you most concerned advisors and fund selectors will see in 2026?
Again, the most important trap is how we respond to volatility. And we respond much better when we are fully prepared. And the next question is, well, how from a behavioral perspective can you be fully prepared? Well, the most important thing is to think about the range of possible outcomes. As human beings, we struggle to do this. This is why behavioral science is so important, that if we can go into the year not thinking about one possible possible outcome, but instead thinking about that range of outcomes. So what would a incredible year for investors look like? What would a dire year look like? And it's likely to be something in between, but how can we prepare investors? How can we prepare portfolios for both of those outcomes? And that's pretty challenging, but what it means is that when you're building a portfolio, when you're providing a financial plan, you can't just have one path in your mind. You have to have a range of paths. You have to build a portfolio which is robust to whatever comes out of geopolitics or markets in the year ahead. And there are various different ways of doing that, but through risk tools and all these other research tools that people will be familiar with. But the thing to remember is that you also have to prepare your client, have to prepare your client's mind for the year ahead. And if you have a portfolio that is able to cope with a full range of outcomes, then what it probably means is that portfolio won't do as well as if they had a concentrated portfolio in whatever does the best in the year ahead. And so, again, you have to prepare clients, we have to prepare ourselves for not always delivering the highest possible returns in the year ahead, because that would involve typically having quite an extreme portfolio. And so it's not just about building the right portfolio to avoid those traps. It's about preparing clients for what the performance journey may look like, and also helping them understand that there is a range of outcomes. As human beings, we tend to look behind us and we can see the thread of history kind of weaving backwards, and it looks so obvious. And so we assume that if we work hard enough, if we do the research, we can identify a thread of history in front of us as well. That's where prediction comes from. But in reality, we can't. The future is genuinely unpredictable, and all we can do is prepare and avoid being overly anchored on one possible outcome.
The dollar also experienced one of its weakest years in more than a decade in 2025. Yet the report argues that despite the drop, it is still expensive relative to most global currencies. What is Morningstar's outlook on the dollar from here? And how should advisors and fund selectors think about positioning portfolios when non-US markets now offer more and better value and better currency prospects?
Rune, this is so important. It's a key consideration for investors in South Africa, whether you're dealing with investors' local portfolios, the local money, or any money they have outside South Africa as well. And I think when we saw the dollar start to fall this year, and remember, it's been incredibly strong for quite a few years, and people assumed that it would stay strong. When we saw it start to weaken earlier this year, then that was accompanied by a lot of narrative about how the place of the US in the world trading order is changing. Will the dollar still be seen as this ultimate sort of risk-free asset? Will US Treasury bonds be seen as the source of the source of all returns? And so we have to remember that when we have these narratives which start to dominate the minds of investors, we've really got to dig in and pick these apart and find out whether they make sense. And really what we see happening, or what we saw happening this year, is a little bit different. What we really saw happening was the dollar, which was very expensive, particularly against the rand, get a little bit cheaper. And so it's a little bit like the sales in the shops that happen this time of year, that a careful shopper is not just looking for a product that is a little bit cheaper than it was, but ideally when you're sales shopping, you want something that's a genuine bargain, something that's genuinely priced below a fair value. And as we look at the dollar, although it's got a fair bit cheaper this year, it still looks pretty expensive. It looks very expensive against the rand. And so we're not seeing either great value in the dollar, or probably more importantly, we're not seeing any evidence that the dollar's role in the global financial system is going away. It's far too early to say that. And so we would say to investors, don't let your dollar positioning be driven by these broad narratives about what the future may hold, but instead anchor on that valuation. And from a value perspective, the dollar still looks unattractive. There's more value, as you said, in other markets around the world. There's certainly a lot more value in the rand compared to the dollar. And so that should help drive some decisions there.
absolutely. The rand strength has been very lucrative for the local market. The JSE is the best performing stock exchange in the world year to date, so it does help. The AI chapter describes an unprecedented global build-out. You know, hyperscalers spending more on data infrastructure than the entire US energy sector. But at the same time, valuations in some AI-linked sectors are nearing tech bubble levels, if we can call it that. What is Morningstar's messages for investors as they navigate genuine long-term opportunity, but also rising concentration and valuation risk?
Well, yes, that is the question on everyone's mind at the moment as we head into the end of the year. We've seen, as you say, this enormous investment in AI infrastructure, and it seems like there's a lot more coming. We've got plans for huge investment in the years ahead, and that's doing a couple of things. The first is it is creating this concentration. A lot of people are talking about the concentration in the US market, but we're seeing this concentration more broadly and more globally as well. So a lot of the debt that is coming to market now in the corporate bond space is to fund AI build out. We see that the company Taiwan Semiconductor, TSMC, which is a big chip manufacturer, obviously in Taiwan, that makes up over 9% of the global emerging markets index. So we're seeing this concentration in many places. And that's dangerous for investors. And it's dangerous because it anchors us on one particular future, on one particular narrative, and that is this ongoing build out of AI. And just for clarity, I have no doubt that AI will change the world around us. But that's not new. We live in a constantly changing world, and technology comes along fairly regularly and changes our entire way of operating, our entire worldview. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's always a great investment. And it's really important, as I mentioned earlier, to have a portfolio that is sufficiently robust and diversified to deal with some of this money, or potentially a lot of this money, being wasted, because we're seeing great promises of investment before the revenue from that potential investment is really coming through. It's a very early stage in the development of AI. We don't know yet who the winners are going to be and what the prize is going to be to be a winner. But as more and more investors, more and more companies have been attracted to that narrative, we've seen this greater level of concentration. And that should be concerning for all investors looking to build a robust portfolio.
Dan, the top 10 US stocks now account for over a third of the entire market, many of them involved in AI. And the outlook is cautious, and it creates a hidden vulnerability for global portfolios. Where does Morningstar see opportunities for investors to diversify away from this concentration risk of the Magnificent Seven or the Magnificent 10 or Magnificent how many you want to be?
That's absolutely right. So they're all magnificent. Call the Magnificent Seven because they're great companies. You know, you can't knock the incredible growth that these companies have achieved. But there's a number of things that prudent investors need to do. The first is, let's dig a little bit deeper into those Magnificent Seven. Although they tend to get lumped together, they're quite different companies with quite different plans. They may all be somewhat dependent on AI, but how they're going to use AI and benefit will be different. So first of all, instead of just going on with that narrative, let's dig a little bit deeper into the different opportunities there. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, as I say, I understand that it's not, when we think about concentration, it's not just about the Magnificent Seven. But even if you look at the US market over the last decade, the weight of the US market in the global index has increased dramatically. And so now, even if you buy a globally diversified fund or globally diversified portfolio, you're likely to have quite a high proportion of that in US equities. And that, again, creates greater concentration. And then, as I mentioned when I was talking about TSMC, even if you go into some emerging market stocks, again, you're seeing that link to the US technology companies, the Magnificent Seven. So it's far more important than it's been for the last decade to really think about where that diversification is in your portfolio, how to create a well-balanced portfolio. And to do that, you have to dig a little bit deeper than we've had to do in the recent past, and let valuation be your guide. When people are trying to build a diversified portfolio, then it's tempting to just look for assets which are in some ways different, in some ways unconnected. But the price you're paying for those assets is also really important. So whenever we're thinking about building a portfolio, whether it's for clients in South Africa or elsewhere in the world, we are driven by valuation. Where can we get more than we're paying for? And so if you combine that valuation-driven approach, a long-term horizon, that's equally important, and digging a little bit deeper into markets and asset classes rather than just thinking at that surface level, that, let's say, global equity level, or just thinking about US markets, then you've got the best chance of building a diversified portfolio. We're seeing plenty of opportunities around the world. We see US smaller companies offer much more attractive opportunities. We see value in the UK. We see value in parts of the emerging world. There's value in parts of the South African market. There's value in lots of different places. But you have to dig a little bit deeper than we've need to do in the last decade, simply because of this concentration.
Dan, income has returned in a meaningful way, but the report notes that resilient income is much harder to secure, especially with credit spreads at decade-long tights. Where does Morningstar see the most attractive and durable income opportunities going into the new year?
Ron, that's absolutely right. It's a tough time for income-focused investors, and particularly when we think about most income-focused investors being probably in retirement or near retirement. And so the stability of that income, the stability of their portfolio is more important than it may have been when they were accumulating these assets early on in their career. So it's not just about where you can get the highest income, but as you mentioned, it's about the sustainability of income. It's the security of that income. And one of the temptations that all portfolio managers face is that by accepting credit risk, by buying bonds that are issued by companies rather than the big secure governments, that can add to the yield that your portfolio delivers. But as you mentioned, typically you are paid for taking on that extra credit risk, the risk that a corporate issuer may default on their debts by securing a significantly higher yield. Well, because everyone's been chasing those yields over the last couple of years and people have been very confident about the economic environment, we've seen what we call those credit spreads decline. And they look to us to offer pretty poor value for investors. And so we'd encourage investors not to take additional credit risk now in order to boost their income. So then the question is, well, if the income on things like US Treasury bonds are declining, if we shouldn't be investing in credit bonds which don't have a high enough return, then where should we be investing? And this is again where we're seeing some opportunities in driving income from companies, from stocks. This used to be the very standard way of delivering not just a high income, but an income that's growing. But that's tended to fall away over the last few years as people have become more focused on the income from bonds. But as you're building an income focused portfolio, think about that balance between the long-term growing income that you can get from stocks and the income that you can get from government bonds. Now, of course, investors in South Africa are in a very unusual situation because your government bonds have not only delivered outstanding returns this year, but still have quite high yields compared to government bonds around the world, and particularly when we think about the lower inflation target that's just been set out. And so if you're investing domestically in South Africa, then, of course, there's some good yields to be had from government bonds. But if you're investing overseas money, then think about that mix between safer government bonds and also having equities as a source of income in your portfolio.
Speaking of South Africa, three regions do stand out in the Outlook report: South Africa's resilience, the UK's deep valuation discount, and China's quiet reset. What should investors know about the potential opportunities across these markets going forward?
Well, yes, Runa, and again, this goes back to that idea of using valuation as your guide to find the most attractive areas for investment. And you mentioned that the UK, I'm going to sound very biased given my accent, but this is a global view that we have at Morningstar, that the UK looks very attractively priced because there's so much bad news baked into the economy and into concerns about social order and all this other thing. In reality, the UK is populated primarily by large global companies that derive most of their income from outside the UK, but trade at a discount because they're based in the UK. That's exactly the sort of opportunity that we're drawn to as long-term investors who focus on valuation. So the UK is a particular area. And again, that gives an example of looking beyond those big headlines, beyond those big narratives, and really doing the hard work on company valuations. Then you mentioned China. Again, China is a really interesting market. It was seen by some managers uninvestable just a couple of years ago, and it's come roaring back this year again because some of those narratives have dissipated and people are more enthusiastic about the stocks there and the valuations. Now, what we're seeing in China is a big economic move to try and reduce excess capacity in that market. So it's really important when investing in China at the moment to think about who can win from a reduction in capacity and who's really going to get left behind. And we talk about that in the outlook. It's a key move that investors need to be aware of. And as you say, then when we come back to South Africa, it's been tremendous to see the popularity of South Africa amongst South African investors roaring back this year. We've seen great returns. But remember, those returns have been fairly concentrated in the gold and platinum miners, and there's still opportunities in the broader South African market. And just as one final positive note there, really, foreigners haven't been investing in South Africa yet. We've still seen outflows from foreign investors who aren't yet investing in South Africa. And so as foreigners discover the opportunities, discover the value in some of these wonderful South African companies, then again, maybe we can see some further growth there. But again, when thinking about the South African market, remember that it's been really concentrated this year in some of those mining companies, and a lot of the opportunities we're seeing are elsewhere.
Daniel, in closing, if you had to summarize Morningstar's message for 2026 in one sentence for advisors, selectors, and allocators listening right now, what would that sentence be?
So really, the most important thing is for investors to stay on the journey, and they can only stay on the journey if they're not surprised. And that's why the most important thing as we go into 2026 is to prepare and not predict.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And thank you, Dan. This has been a powerful way to wrap up not only the Morningstar 2026 outlook, but to the firm's contribution to our podcast series this year. Before we close, I want to extend a sincere thank you to you and the entire Morningstar team, from the behavioral scientist to the strategist, regional specialist and analyst whose work underpins this outlook and the work we've done this year. To all our Citywire South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money, Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uester, and my producer Daniel Camargo from the Citywire Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please do not forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and iono.fm. All Citywire South Africa podcasts and videos are also available on our website, so please go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content. And with that, and for the last time this year, goodbye.